Hi, I'm Miranda Bass, and you're listening to Drinking and Trashing, Tour with a Twist. What kind of bird is freedom? Let's discuss.
Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Amanda.
I really, really love that last week we had, you know, just like one portion that we could focus on.
Yeah, that was really nice last week.
Yeah, especially after a couple of weeks of double portions. I thought it was nice to slow down, right?
It was.
And you like that pace?
I do. Yeah, it was nice.
What would happen if I told you that, you know, during the last week of school that you got to speed up again with another double portion?
Okay, well, as long as this is the last double portion.
No, it is. And trust me, you're going to feel a lot stronger when it ends.
Really?
Sure.
Well, then let's go.
Feels like these days have just flown by, and I'm not entirely sure how we got here because it truly does feel like we just started this book, but somehow we've come to the end of it. Now, I'm going to say it's probably because of all the double portions, and you guessed it. You have another two for one sale today. We've got a double header of a parsha this week with the Harbehukotai. I'm not going to talk about so much what's in it because I'll leave that for Gabe and the brilliance of that, but I will say it's a really interesting double parsha that helps us figure out what it means to actually rest, relax, maybe take some time off. Who knows? Maybe even have some, quote, free time, end quote. There's a pun in there. It'll come your way later. Having said all of this, we're really excited to have the gift of a wonderful guest joining us today. Miranda Bass is a computer forensic analyst at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security working on criminal investigations. She found her new path after serving in the U.S. Army as an intelligence officer and a paratrooper. Just in case you were curious, probably the scariest thing she's ever done is this podcast. Just kidding. We can't believe that you are so cool and so brave. Miranda earned an MA in Security and Diplomacy Studies from Tel Aviv University as a Fulbright Fellow, and she graduated from the U.S. Military Academy, West Point. We're struggling at HEC, but we're doing the best we can. And hey, Gabe's graduating soon. Actually, by the time this gets released, Gabe will have graduated. A+ master. In addition to her time in Israel, she has lived for 15 months in China and Taiwan and has published on Chinese and Israeli defense and cybersecurity. Miranda was born and raised a New Yorker. Woo-woo! And is a frequent shlichat tzibor, or service leader, at her beloved congregation, Or Zarua. She has been privileged to spend time learning at Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Yeshivat Hadar. Miranda speaks Mandarin and Hebrew and likes to spend time with her fiancé, Alyssa, reading back issues of The Economist and trying to catch up on 929. Check the show notes. We'll explain what that is there. Miranda, we are so excited to welcome you to Drinking and Joshing Tour with a Twist. I feel like you've done more with your life than I could even truly dream of, and we're so excited to learn more. Welcome to the show.
I am so excited to be here. That's very generous, and I can't wait to learn from all of you.
We are excited to learn with and from you. And so, Gabe, I'm going to say it because by the time this releases, it's going to be true. Master of Sacred Music co-host, how's it going, friend?
Oh, it's going great. But you know what's even more exciting than me getting a pink hood? You getting ordained, which you will be very soon. Very exciting.
That is true. By the time this episode releases, I guess, yeah, it will be official of Rabbi Amanda K. Weiss. Maybe we'll put it in the show notes too, of like new title. It'll be exciting. Having said all of this, and he's been along for the whole ride, Idan Valman, we're thrilled to have you back, and we're happy to see you. And I know for a fact that you're also enjoying lots of celebrations this week and memories and thoughts. So, Idan, how's it going, and are you enjoying this free time to be with us on the podcast?
Things are going great. It's good to be back. It feels weird to say be back every time, because, like, it's weird to, like, be gone for a little bit, but yeah, it's a weird liminal space that we're in right now, huh? trigger word for HEC students.
So for our listeners at home, a liminal space is a moment in time where you're really kind of just waiting to see what happens next. It's a moment between times or spaces or scenes, kind of like this moment that's about to happen right before we start with our Parsha rundown.
Get ready for some agricultural laws. What? In the land of Israel, every 7 years, give the land a break. It's kind of like how we take a break for Shabbat every 7 days. I wonder if there's a connection there. Anyway, every 7 years, no planting, no sowing, no pruning, no reaping, no gathering. But don't worry, you and your people and animals can eat whatever grows naturally. Anything similar to that? Yes, it's the Jubilee year. Every 50th year, that's 7 times 7 plus 1, is a Jubilee year. The shofar is sounded, and we proclaim liberty throughout the land. People are free and debts are forgiven. The land is given a rest and all debts are forgiven and we have a nice time. Interesting line. You don't own the land, you're just borrowing it from God. Cool. There's a lot in this portion about how to treat people in need. Are you giving loans to your own people? Don't charge interest. That's not nice. Hear that, student loans? Next, don't treat people down on their luck like slaves. Also, treat your slaves nicely. None of this applies only to Israelites, but to the strangers who dwell among you. Treat them nicely, including and especially those in need. Quick aside, idols are bad. If we follow God's laws, there will be rain and the earth will be fertile and the trees will be fruitful and you will have an abundance of food and security. God will grant peace in the land and every person will sit under their own vine and fig tree. Oh, wait, that's Hamilton. Just kidding. It's actually Micah. So God will favor you and make you fertile and maintain the covenant and will dwell among you and all good things. But also, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, God will make life really difficult. Plants won't grow, there will be violence and instability, and generally bad things will happen. In fact, the punishment will be 7 times the sin. Lots of sevens in this portion. In summary, don't do bad things. Some people might make vows of service to the temple. Sometimes they want to get out of those vows. Good news, you can pay your way out. We get a whole list of prices for different ages and genders according to the value of their work in the temple. Any firstborn animal belongs to God, but you can pay the temple whatever it's worth to have it for yourself. Anything that's prescribed to the temple can be redeemed for a cash sum. Everything has its price. And that's Parashat Behar Bechukotai and Leviticus. Chazak chazak v'nit chazek.
Chazak, chazak, v'nit chazek. That was impressive. So much happens in these two parashiyot, and can't wait to discuss.
I'm looking forward to it.
I love that every time we end a portion or end a book that we say, Hazak, hazak, v'nit chazek, you know, strength, strength, may we be strengthened. And Miranda, I have to tell you, based on reading your bio alone and getting to know you a little bit, I have to tell you, strength seems to be like a core value of what you do and the work that you do. But instead of just making that assumption, you know, you've done a lot of work with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and also having worked in the Army. And really, it seems like you have a love of bringing different groups together. And so I want to know, what's the insight or belief or values that truly drive your work and the passions behind what you do?
That's such an interesting framing. I hadn't thought about it from a strength perspective before necessarily, but that's something for me to think about a little more. I think really what's driving me professionally and hopefully in my life a little more broadly is trying to do service, avoda, which I think is a big part of my Jewish identity, a part of my professional identity, and trying to serve different communities that I'm like lucky to be a part of.
So you already touched on how service is itself a Jewish value, avoda or avoda or however you want to, you know. Anyway, you've already kind of touched on how it's a Jewish value. I'm curious if we can kind of suss that out a little bit more, if we can talk a little bit more about how this drive to service, especially from a place of like service to your country, that's, you know, not even to the Jewish people, but to a broader community or a different community. Does that connect with your Jewish values as well? And if so, how do you make that connection?
I think that originally when I started out, so just so we're all on the same page, I technically joined the Army when I was 17. So I think my conception of values and choices and even like how this would affect my future was very different. But as I grew older and grew into these roles and grew into my Jewish identity, I can't really separate them from each other. I see myself as a Jewish person in sort of like a wholeness. And so whatever I'm doing throughout the day professionally can't be separated from how I feel called to act in certain ways by Hashem, by the Torah, by Halacha. And so when I'm thinking about what do I want to do with my life, I feel like we spend a huge portion of our lives working. And both of you obviously identify with this in some way as clergy, future clergy, almost. I felt like I really needed to live that.
So I know that in our Torah, both in the written Torah and even in our oral Torah, there's a lot of conversation about how we're meant to interact with each other. And Behar, the first part of this particular dual portion, also discusses this, right? Like how we're supposed to not only treat the land that we live on, which is its own entity and one that we're supposed to respect and, you know, be a part of and be in relationship with, but also how we're supposed to deal with one another. And in Leviticus 25:14, for those following along at home, we do have a line that says, "Al tonu ish et achiv," that you shouldn't wrong one another. You shouldn't wrong your neighbor, your kin, and people who are like you. I would actually extend that to say you shouldn't wrong people who are not like you as well. But I do know that part of the work that you do is working on criminal investigations. And so I see this thing that says you shouldn't wrong one another, right? We know that we shouldn't. And yet there are still those inklings and there are still those pieces that come together that cause us to. And so I'm wondering how you wrestle with that in your job where you investigate criminal activity or work on these pieces, knowing the value and why you think people might break it.
That's something that I've really been thinking about since I started doing this work, which I've been in a role doing criminal justice stuff for almost 2 years now. So not so long, but enough that I've been a little bit exposed to actually a really intimate aspect, I would say, of how criminals think and what they operate. Because when you do computer forensics, in almost every case I do, I work on someone's phone. And it's usually the phone of the suspect or one of the suspects of the investigation. And when you look at someone's phone, my job is to take all the information off it. So I'm actually reading all of the text messages. I'm seeing everything someone did on their phone, all of their pictures, their apps. It's incredibly intimate. And you really get a sense of how this person spends their day and what they're thinking about and maybe their family members or who they're talking to, everything. And I've come to think that it's not so black and white the way we think about what's right and what's wrong or doing harm to someone else. Because often you can see a path that someone traveled that led them to make certain decisions that have ended them up in this situation. And it's actually like, I feel a degree of compassion, like, wow, if only you wouldn't have made this mistake or this thing hadn't happened to you that caused you to really make this bad decision, you wouldn't be in this situation at all. I wouldn't be investigating you. You wouldn't be looking at jail time. But at the same time, there's real harm that's been done to that achiv, to that second person or party or organization. And there needs to be some kind of restitution or righting or compensation for that. And so that's kind of where I see myself fitting in there.
So I really appreciate that take. And I want to connect it with another line that comes up just a little bit down the pike in 25:17. We have the same actual commandment, the same prohibition with a slightly different word. And so here we have the lo tonu ish et amito. So as opposed to your brother or your kin, we're not supposed to wrong one another or one's people. And I'm certainly interested to hear what you think the difference might be, you know, between wronging our kin or our brother and wronging our people. Especially, you know, does one mean our nation, right? Amito could be a nation, our country, that we shouldn't wrong one's country, and how that lands for you.
That's awesome. One of the first things I learned in orienting myself to this kind of work is there's fundamentally two types of crime that we conceive of, at least in the US. And there are crimes against people and there are crimes against institutions that can span the gamut. It could be, you know, perhaps a company or a nonprofit that you worked for. It can be a community. It can be something like a school, or it can be the government that you defrauded in some way. But those two different types of crimes feel very different in their impact and also in the way they're prosecuted. There are differences, but there's a sense of injustice in both cases that sometimes I feel, certainly the victims feel. And so I love how the pasuk, the verse, is repeated and the same verb is used, but a different object is used. There's a lot there, I think.
Well, and in that very next verse, Amanda referenced chapter 25, verse 17. So in verse 18, the very next verse is, "Observe my laws and you will live in security." And so I'm curious about kind of your view as somebody who's worn a few different hats in the realm of like national security. I'm curious how that lands for you of like, if you do the right thing, if you follow the laws, then you are going to live in security. How does that land for you that like, if you do the right thing, it's going to work out. You're going to be good. You're going to be secure. You're going to be safe.
There's so many directions to think about this. The first one, I think, is that there's two aspects of security that I've worked in. I'll just say on like a very simple level, criminal justice is really like inward facing, like within our communities in terms of how we treat each other. And then national security and being in the military is really outwardly focused, at least in the US, in terms of potential threats from other countries, other organizations that aren't domestic. And another way to think about this is that there's a certain question that arises when you hear that pasuk of, if you keep my laws, I think really we can interpret it to be like, things are going to work out for you. You're going to be able to live a good life. And yet there are bad impulses that people have. There are situations that lead to wrongdoing, whether or not it's on purpose or whether or not it's merited. And there needs to be systems for restitution of those wrongs. And so I think that's a little bit where I am right now professionally. But I think perhaps that's in tension almost with the parshiyot that we're seeing today, which lead us, I think, to believe that God is really going to decide what's wrong and what's right and mete out punishment or blessing. And it's really not us who make that decision. So I'm actually wondering what you guys have to say about that too.
I think for me, I've always said, I've been skiing a lot in my life. I've climbed up Masada. I've been fine with heights, right? Like, that sounds like a weird thing to talk about in this moment, but because we were talking about security, but I'm fine with heights. I'm fine with kind of exploring things. I only get terrified when I feel a loss of stability, right? I fear instability. And that is a lack of security, right? A lack of feeling safe, a lack of, and interestingly enough, in Hebrew, it's the same word, right? This idea of betach. Like a lack of certainty, a lack of trust even in the system. Look, I think it can be hard. I'm going to bring this up and embarrass myself where I'm like, okay with that. But in answering your question, I'm going to say like, I've used this example when I've been teaching of a clip from Aladdin, the animated movie Aladdin, you know, not the documentary like The Prince of Egypt, but let's say it was. That we have a really interesting situation in Aladdin where he sings a whole song, you know, one jump ahead of the, you know, and this idea that like he says he only steals what he needs to eat. And he goes, I only steal what I can't afford. And he goes, that's everything. And all of the guards go running after him and call him names and are really horrible about it, right? Horrible. And then like 2 seconds later, there's a scene where Jasmine steals. And she doesn't know that she's stealing. She just picks up an apple to feed like a little kid. And everybody's like, cool, except for the guy that she steals from. And Aladdin, like, you know, is like, oh, it's okay. She's my sister. She wasn't really thinking. And people were like, oh, okay. Like, we understand. So it seems like there are some issues where it's okay to steal and some issues where it's okay to break the law in order to give yourself the security that you don't have by following the laws, right? Like, you'd go hungry, you'd have issues. And for people who are like Amanda, they could get a job. You know what? It's not that easy. It's not always that easy to get a job. I'm putting it out there. I graduated in 2008. I lost my job in 2009. It took me 2.5 years to get a job. So I just want to say, like, it's not always so easy to get a job. It's not always so easy to be able to do these things. All of which was a really long-winded way to answer your question. Gabe, I don't know if you have other thoughts that you want to add.
I think that one interesting thing is that this idea of security repeats itself. We've been talking a lot about, like, how there's repetition in this Torah portion. You know, I talked about verse 18, you shall observe my laws, and you'll live on the land in security. The very next verse, the land will yield its fruit and you'll eat your fill and you will live in security. And so to me, like, there has to be a question of, like, the Torah doesn't have, there's this tradition where we say, well, the Torah doesn't say anything for no reason. So there must be a reason that this is repeated. And to me, that means, okay, well, it must be that these are two different kinds of security. There's the security that comes from observing laws and observing rules, and there's security that comes from being able to eat and being satiated and being healthy. So on one hand, I think you have that kind of stability that you're talking about, Amanda. You have guideposts to live by. You have something before you that tells you this is what your life should look like, and that's a form of security. And yet there's another form of security, which is kind of just those base needs on kind of, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of, like, do you have enough to eat? Do you have a place to sleep? Do you have the things that are gonna, you know, keep you being as a person? And to me, it's important to separate those things. It's important to say, like, there's a difference between feeling secure and being secure. And yet, I think it's important that we recognize, no, those two things are actually really connected. It's really important that not only do we have the food that we need to eat, but that we're also living our lives in a way that we feel is productive and we feel is secure and that we feel good about. You know, it kind of reminds me of that old socialist song, yes, give us bread, but give us roses too. We need both.
I am thinking about this idea, you know, it Gabe, that actually really does bring to mind that one of the most famous parts of this dual portion actually comes from Leviticus 25:10, which is the line that is quoted on the Liberty Bell. You know, this idea of Ukratam dror ba'aretz lechol yoshveha yovel hi tehiyeh lechem. Right? So here's the deal. You're all like, what did she just say in this Hebrew? But I'm going to tell you, don't worry. Really, that on the Liberty Bell, it says you should declare, you should call out, you should proclaim, drawer, liberty, release, freedom, pick a word that you like. Va'aretz, in this land, lechol yoshveha, for everybody that dwells in it. That, by the way, Gabe, is like the simplicity, right? Like, that everybody should have this right, right, of liberty, that everyone should have it. Yovel hi tehiyeh lechem, that it shall be a jubilee for you. That's the celebration. That's the roses. That's the beauty, you know, of this place. And it will say that it only happens once in a generation. And we don't talk about that, right? That it happens Shanat Chachamishim, that it happens in the 50th year. Some people may have to wait 50 years to get that liberty, to get that release. And Miranda, you know, as somebody who has fought for our country, who has, you know, represented and worked, I, again, will say, with strength in the work that you do, that seems hard for me, that, like, you would have to wait so long to get something that seems as if it should just truly be an inalienable right.
I love this verse, and I really appreciate the way you framed it. And I have so many thoughts about it. I think to extend the feeling of, wow, is once in 50 years really enough? We can think about the biblical time period in which the context for this verse exists, in which people probably didn't live so much beyond 50 years. It was really perhaps just once in your lifetime, maybe even less. as opposed to today where we could really feel certain that you would be able to experience it once. And also, even in the land of Israel, we don't exactly have that system today, do we? It doesn't quite work like that. There are a lot of, you could call them legal fictions or different systems that work in order to produce food in the Shemitah year and the seventh year of that cycle, and also in the 50th year so that people aren't necessarily dislocated from where they live. And so I actually think, and I think I take this from Robert Alter's commentary, that the Jubilee is even aspirational in the biblical formulation, not just today, but even back then. I think it was seen as utopian, perhaps not quite realistic, but it's in there and it's important. As Gabe said, every pasuk that's in there has something to say. I can't help but think about, you know, lo alecha hamlacha ligmor, you can't finish all the work yourself, but neither can you desist from it. As we're working toward a society that's more just, where, like you said, Amanda, people can all provide from themselves in a dignified way. And also, when wrongdoing does occur, there's justice, whatever that exactly means. The Torah is trying to show us how to strive for that. The Torah is, I think, also showing us a vision for what could be, what society we could achieve. And I see myself as trying to play some role in moving us forward, if I can be so presumptuous.
I don't think there's anything presumptuous about that at all. I think that's, I would hope that we all feel that way, that we all feel that our work betters the lives of those around us, that it moves the world toward a place of more security, of more freedom, of more liberty, of more justice. I really appreciate that in this conversation, we're talking about the Jubilee year as something that is maybe utopian, maybe, you know, hypothetical in nature, when in our text, it's something that is so clear cut, like, yes, you will do this. This is what is supposed to happen. And yet, if you look at most scholars would say, yeah, this never actually historically took place. This isn't something that really ever happened. This is something that, you know, is nice. It's a nice idea. And yet, clearly, it's something that's endured not only for us, not only, you know, in the Hebrew, but as Amanda said, on the Liberty Bell. This is something that's really, sorry for the pun, rung true for all sorts of people and peoples at different times. And I can't help but think that this kind of freedom is something that we're all hoping for. And whether or not we all work toward it, I think is another question. And so I'm curious, if you had a call to action, or if you had a piece of wisdom, or if you had something that would kind of help us move forward a little bit toward that goal, if you had to leave listeners with one thing, what do you want listeners to walk away with after listening to this episode?
I think a lot of Judaism, including these parshiot, is really about finding the right message for the particular age or situation in which we find ourselves. And I think we're at a moment right now of turning away from each other. And we have such a beautiful vision of the way society and the way life could be in this parsha. And my opinion at this moment is that we need to turn toward each other a little bit more. And so I would love to leave people thinking about the communities in which they live, often physically, but also the spaces in which they find themselves, and whether or not they feel friction with people around them. Because I think most of us certainly feel friction with people in our larger national community, but perhaps we don't feel it in the circles in which we run. And if we don't feel it there, it's probably because we're not encountering those people outside of our circles that we have friction with. And I would challenge you to turn towards someone you might feel more friction with and try and reach out to them. I think that's really, that's a step right now toward the vision in our parsha this week.
I want to challenge you a little more. And I want to ask, what does that look like? What does it look like to, you know, turn towards someone and pursue that kind of justice or that kind of freedom? I feel like we're at a moment that's so fragmented, that's so polarized, that it at least for me, it's difficult to, you know, look around and say, like, yeah, we're all working toward the same goal. How do you respond to that? How do you, I mean, I guess this is even more so because you're somebody in the field of like national service. I'm curious how you see that kind of turning toward one another when it feels like we're not so together right now.
Can I also just jump in and say, on top of that, I know that by the time that I finish this, you're going to be like, what was the question? And so maybe we'll let Gabe kind of give you that question as well. But just to underline what Gabe's talking about, we talked a lot about Bihar, but in Bihuko Tai, right, we have a difficult like piece in 26, you know, 6 and 7 and 8 and, you know, that we're going to get peace in the land and it's going to be great, except the only way that we do that is by the sword. You know, so the only way that we get to have peace, the only way that we get to this peaceful ending is to fight and to possibly kill. And that's hard too. And so I echo Gabe, like, you know, in that question of like, how do we do that? How do we face each other? How do we allow ourselves to see the other even when there might be enmity between us?
So I want to answer your question really concretely, your question first, Gabe, about turning toward really like another person, I think we're speaking about. From my time in the military, you know, it's you find yourself in a unit or on a post with people you have nothing necessarily in common with, all who just also happen to join the military and be stationed in this particular place or put in this particular unit. And I think that something that's achievable and also not beyond us is to really find one thing you have in common with someone else that you fundamentally disagree with. You definitely have at least one thing. And that search is really an openness, I think hopefully in a safe way, in which you can have a real connection with someone else. That's how I would answer that in a really concrete way. And I think hopefully that's been an opening to have a foundation in which you can talk about things you disagree as well, but the first step, I think, is just to find something you have in common with that person and see their common humanity. And with respect to peace only after violent struggle, like really violent struggle, not just in this parsha, but in so much of the Tanakh, I think that's really the balance of what Torah has to offer us. In our parsha, we have a utopian vision of the way life could be. And we also have vivid descriptions of how bad things also can be, because I think the Torah contains all of our reality. And I think part of what you guys do in particular is suss out which things we're striving for and which things are there for us to see our flaws in, or to reflect upon ourselves and say, are we doing this right now? You know, I certainly pray and try and work for a world in which we don't need violent struggle in order to achieve peace. But certainly as someone who served in the military, sometimes it is necessary to defend with force. And it's a reality that we have to, and I think be wary of, as it's described really awfully, the reality in our tradition. Yeah.
One thing that I've been thinking a lot about is this idea about like freedom and liberty. They feel like resting places. Like, we have liberty, we have freedom, those feel like such strong words. And yet we know both from history and from this Torah portion that those are actually really delicate. That liberty and freedom take a lot of work, that it's not something that we, certainly not something we just take for granted, and not even something we have all the time. And if we go by the letter of the law, only once every 50 years we proclaim liberty through the land. Ibn Ezra, when talking about that verse of proclaim liberty, tries to parse that word that we translate as liberty. And he says, we know what this word means because it appears in Proverbs. And there we translate it as a swallow, as a bird. And I think that that's such a wonderful metaphor, that freedom is a bird. Freedom is something that's delicate and beautiful and, you know, winged and sings. And I'm sure we could go for miles with that metaphor. But I'm both wary of that kind of descriptor of freedom as something delicate. And if I may say, in awe of the work that you have really committed your life to in pursuing that freedom, pursuing that liberty, pursuing that justice, given that it is something so precious and so delicate. I'm curious if you could, does that land for you? Does that ring true for you, that idea that freedom is something delicate, that liberty, that justice are delicate? How do you feel about this idea of freedom, of liberty, of justice, not as inherently strong, but as delicate, as in need of protection?
I love the idea of the bird, because I conceive of freedom, liberty, perhaps not as delicate, but certainly as constantly moving and changing. And I think the bird is a beautiful way to visualize that. Even I think it connects back to what you raised, Amanda, about peace in the land and really our sovereignty in the land through violence. That was perhaps authentic at one point in time. And right now we see things very differently. And that's also authentic for us now. You know, how we experience freedom, how we strive for it is the modality changes, and also the way we conceive of it changes. And I think the possibility that then opens up for us is to be constantly sensitive to the different communities and societies in which we live and operate, and how people are or aren't able to enjoy and express those freedoms, and how we need to adjust and shift to facilitate more of them.
Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Amanda.
I've been running around all day and it's been a little crazy, and I am feeling like a little thirsty. And I was hoping, because, you know, I'm going to be moving soon and money's a little tight, I was hoping maybe for a drink that was free.
A free drink. Well, this week on Midrashic Mixology, we have a drink that has, like, a lot of ingredients, because that's what it is. But, it is about freedom. This week on Midrashic Mixology, we present Proclaim Liberty. I haven't had a Long Island iced tea since college, but I think it's time to sound the shofar throughout the land for this drink, Proclaim Liberty. For our agricultural laws, we're starting with two slices of a peach. Muddle those in a shaker, and then it's time for our liquids. Because this is based on a Long Island iced tea, there are a lot of liquors for all of the forgiven debts. A 1/2 ounce each, gin, vodka, light rum, and tequila. Add the sweetness of the Jubilee with a 1/2 ounce each of simple syrup and orange juice. To cut through all of those shenanigans, 1 ounce of lemon juice. For a non-alcoholic Liberty, swap out all the liquor for 2 ounces of chilled Earl Grey tea. Either way, shake it all up with ice and strain over fresh ice. Top it off with Coca-Cola. For the refreshment of Shemitah and the Jubilee, garnish with a mint sprig. Raise a glass to liberty. L'chaim.
L'chaim. I love how many different ingredients there are. It just adds the diversity and different types of people and peoples that get to enjoy liberty together.
How many times can we say liberty in this segment? Amanda, do you want to say liberty a few times?
I'll give that a free pass.
Oh my God.
Nice.
Well, I feel like I've made enough free puns or discount puns for, you know, a minute. But I will say, Gabe, that I also could have made a 2-for-1 deal. So, like, I'm just saying that I was thoughtful about holding back on my jokes for Midrashic mixology, which is good because then I could save them for our penultimate section, our thank yous and our closing cues. Miranda, Gabe, Idan, it's bittersweet, but it's here in Behar Behukotai in our closing parshiot of Leviticus. We deal with allowing the land to rest and declaring freedom for those in bondage. Okay, those who are listening at home know that we leaned a little heavily into Behar this time. Please deal with us. It's okay. Any complaints can go to Idan. But we celebrate this freedom in our daily prayers, saying we are B'nai Horin, that we are free. How can we work within the system, broken as it may sometimes be, to create a more ethical society that allows for both liberty and freedom for all? Underline, bold, highlight, red print. Miranda, we'll start with you.
I think this goes back to my earlier charge to really turn toward each other. I think it includes people you disagree with, but it also includes people that maybe you've overlooked or maybe we don't think about so much, who need more attention on them so that they can get access to what they need. I also think that agitating for positive change within the systems we find ourselves in is a great way to drive constructive change. Bit of a hot take. I am an advocate of incrementalism. I think it's a safe way to have positive change. And so I'm definitely a within the system, we can do good bit by bit. Type of person.
I also agree that sometimes small steps are the way to make big changes. Gabe, what are you thinking in terms of making sure that we have, you know, a more equitable system for all?
You know, Amanda, this might be coming from, you know, me kind of going off on a tangent in my head because you talked about celebrating this freedom in our daily prayers and those morning blessings, Birkat HaShachar. If you're a fan of Mishkan Tefillah, the Reform Sidur, then you might know them as Nisim Bechol Yom, those everyday miracles. And something that I think is really interesting about those blessings is that if you open a traditional Sidur, So not Mishkan Tefillah, not a Reform Sidur, not a Progressive Sidur, not even a Conservative Sidur. But if you open a traditional Sidur, you'll notice that some of the blessings are actually phrased in the negative. You'll notice that one of the blessings reads, "Who has made me a man and not a woman," or "Who has made me," or "Who has not made me a slave," and one of the things that I really appreciate about the way progressive liturgy has evolved is that we've reframed those same blessings in the positive. So instead of saying, "Who has not made me a woman," we say, "Who has made me in the image of God," She'asani b'tzelem Elohim. And I think that there's something really beautiful about taking the blessing, taking the essence of the blessing, taking the idea behind it, taking the message behind it, taking what we want to take from it, and reframing it in a way that's positive, reframing it in a way that's affirming, and not just throwing the baby out with the bathwater, that we're not just saying, that kind of rubs us the wrong way, so we're going to get rid of it, but instead saying, you know what, there's something here. And it's not perfect, but we're going to change it a little bit. Maybe it's that incrementalism that you were talking about. And also, I think that there has to be a respect for tradition. There has to be a respect for what's come before, even when we want to change things. In fact, especially when we want to change things.
Idan, I know for you, you have made a lot of things more accessible to people that wouldn't have been accessible otherwise. You know, you've made it possible for people to experience the world in a way, even if they can't be there, maybe even virtually. And so I've been thinking a lot about the work that you do. And I'm curious for you, like, how you might be able to apply that, you know, in the world at large, even if it's just that.
Well, I don't have anything like huge level this week, but I will say that like even on a micro scale regarding just like even the Jewish community relative as opposed to just, you know, society as a whole, there's even a lot of work to be done there. The Jewish community at points can be, and depending on how you look at it, can be very seen as very scattered. I can't think of a better word than that for right now, but there's a lot of work to be done there. And I think that as Jews, we hold the value very highly of just showing up for each other. And I think if we can continue to keep doing that at just a base level, that's a great starting point.
I really appreciate that. I have been thinking about this a lot, and I always laugh, and Idan and Gabe often laugh at me because I create these questions usually a little over a week before the episode happens, and then I don't think about answering them until, you know, the show happens and we get there. But I have thought about this one, and I have two thoughts about it. The first is checking our assumptions, you know, about really like what people are going through. And I brought up a lot in before, but this idea of why crimes get committed, or, you know, I would say, as Marina said before, like really thinking about what people need, and helping them get it perhaps before they're in a situation to make a decision that ends up unfortunately influencing their lives negatively. And I want to point out, like, I am using they language. I want to say, like, it could happen to me. It could happen to any of us, right? Like, any of us can face really dire straits or hard times and have to make difficult decisions. Which leads me to another thought, which is, like, maybe not thinking about the symptom of the problem, but thinking about the cause. And what that means is, are the laws that we're dealing with the right laws in the first place? You know, not all of them, you know, I feel like the not, you know, hitting people with your car when they make you angry in rush hour traffic is probably the right move. But I will say, like, thinking about why the laws came into place, how they came into place, what they were trying to do, if they still apply, is a process that we should continuously undergo. Revisiting our laws and seeing how they best serve the people. Because, by the way, the laws and the leaders that enforce the laws, those people are supposed to be put in place to serve the people, not to inhibit, not to, you know, oppress, but to serve them, to make our society a better place, a more equal place, a more health place. And so if our laws aren't serving us, or if some of them aren't, then yeah, I think we should review them and maybe address them and amend them, you know, as best we can so that they can better serve the people. And that way, hopefully allow for some more liberties and freedoms for all. Maybe that's a real dream, but I feel like Bahar Vahukotai like is kind of a if you will, it is no dream moment. And so, Miranda, I know that people could probably be talking about these things for a while to come, and I've definitely opened up a question that might lead to some interesting conversations. So if people want to continue the conversation, how can they best find or follow you?
I love writing. I love to correspond with people. If you're interested, I would love for you to send me an email so I can really speak to you person to person. And I look forward to continuing any conversation.
I am so excited for people to continue the conversation with you. And to that end, any last words, thoughts, concerns, or jokes?
We've talked about a lot of subjects today, some of which are really sensitive for people. And I want to represent that I think all of us are coming here in search of Torah and truth and uplift. And also, I want to thank you both very much for being so thoughtful in your questions and your responses, and encourage all of us to be mindful about our relationships and the systems in which we live and operate and hopefully thrive. And, how we can be positive forces.
Thank you so much, Miranda, for coming in and inspiring us, not only with the work that you're doing, but also with the values that really support and undergird that work, and for making us think really hard about the way in which we live in the world. Thank you, Gabe, for an excellent rundown and for a great drink that Miranda definitely has some thoughts on, but is excited to maybe try, I think, hopefully. Thank you to Idan, who helped us incredibly with our technology, but also who helped make us laugh, because I think both of us thought that a Long Island iced tea was just a spiked iced tea, and we've learned. Yidan and I have learned something very serious today. Thank you to our editor, Mike, who always makes us sound brilliant. And of course, thank you to all of you, our listeners, who have been along with us for the long haul. We love you. We wouldn't exist without you. And we hope that you are having a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay tuned for our conclusion coming at you now. You know, they say that the way that you read the Torah portion depends on really where you are in life, that kind of how you're sitting is how you come to it. And we've been really interesting with these portions. You know, I have to tell you, our first year that we did Behar Bechukotai, we had an urban farmer from Adam Ackerman. And then the second time we did this, we had a past politician and a CEO come on and talk about how, you know, Behar and Liberty like has really influenced the work that he's done. And we looked at it in a different way. And I'll say I did Bechukotai last year, so I don't know what I talked about, but hopefully it was good and people enjoyed it. But this year, bringing in this idea of, you know, homeland security and criminal investigations and also like service work in the U.S. Army. I will say that Miranda like really, really brought up some pieces for me that I hadn't thought about in this portion before, you know, especially this idea of living in security twice that we had that living in security based on this idea of being good to each other. And twice also in just a few lines of not wronging one another, the idea of being able to focus on the why behind these laws, the purpose of these laws, and the power that they have to influence our lives was just incredibly meaningful. And so I'm really grateful to Miranda for coming on and letting us talk about these in a totally different way.
I totally agree. I also really appreciated her emphasis on personal relationships, that in order to kind of have that peace and that justice between people, we really need to be able to look at one another on a really individual level. I loved what she said about how all we really need to do is like find one common point between us and another person. And no matter how different we are, that one common point, that one shared piece of our identities is something that we can build a whole relationship off of. And peace can be built off of that one relationship. I really appreciate her emphasis on those relationships. I appreciated the way she spoke about that kind of old paradox of for peace, we must prepare for war, that there's something tragically necessary about the need to fight for security. And yet, the recognition that security ultimately comes in peace.
I also think the conversation about who we're responsible toward comes through really hard in this. And I'll take ownership. I know in the kind of intro to this episode, I talked about, we might talk about the fact that, like, you know, free time is important and none of us are particularly great at it. What I will say is that in Behar, like, we hear that rest is radical, right? Like, it's religious, it's holy, like being able to actually let yourself and your land and your people rest and have some free time matters. More importantly, the way that we treat ourselves and the world that we live in and with and on matters. And that also comes into relationship, right? This idea of being able to be in conversation and making sure that we are not wronging each other is important. You know, it's funny, last week we had a conversation of ve'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, right? Like that we had, or 2 weeks ago, that ve'ahavta l'reicha kamocha came in as one of the most important commandments, this idea of we must love our neighbor as we do ourselves. And here we're told, you know, don't hurt your brother, your kin, your fellow, and then don't wrong, right? Don't hurt, don't wrong, don't transgress against, don't do ill by your people, our people, his people, their people. And I will say that I do think there are interesting levels of our responsibility to each other. And the best way to do that is to figure out, you know, who's like us, who's not like us. Where do we fit into society? How are we making sure that that society is being built in a way that we can take ownership of it and make it better?
We know that there are a lot of different kinds of service, that we can be of service to one another, to our communities, to our people, to our nation in myriad different ways. For Amanda, now a rabbi, that's one way of being of service. For Miranda, she's chosen a really remarkable path through the military, through justice, that I think we're all in awe of, that we thank her and all service members for their service.
And she also, don't forget, is sometimes a service leader for her community back home.
Interesting how that works.
Yeah, so I don't know if people know this, but the word avodah or avoda, the way that Miranda brought it up before, not only means service as in, you know, priestly service or sacrificial service, or but also means to work, to be in service of something, to be of use to something. And all of us, by the way, get to do that too. We get to be somewhat utilitarian, but in the way, meaning that people can work with us and through us to make life a little bit more enjoyable. And we hope that we've done that for you. We haven't really made this announcement yet, and maybe, hopefully, you'll bear with us that we've decided to do it now, but our podcast is going to be coming to an end shortly with graduation ordination behind us. We are coming to our final episodes, and we hope that we've been a holy vessel for you, a clay kodesh, if you will, that this has been a special way of experiencing Jewish time and Jewish tradition and text in a way that's been able to be holy and meaningful and memorable, and that you've been able to take ownership of your Judaism and your relationship to Torah and text in your own terms, in your own time. It's been a really meaningful journey for us, and don't worry, we have a few more episodes that are coming your way before we say goodbye to this iteration of Drinking and Drashing Torah with a Twist. But we did want to just kind of drop it out there that for us too, there is something sweet about having some freedom coming up our way and declaring it for all, and that we hope that you are able to have your cups filled as beautifully as we have. So we do have two more episodes coming down the docket. Be excited for them. We're going to bring back a beloved guest and a huge member of our story for the next episode. And you'll have some familiar faces in the last one, or at least some familiar voices. And as always, we raise our glasses to you. We love you, our listeners, who have been along with us on this journey. And we hope that you always have a glass filled with joy and jubilation. L'chaim.
L'chaim.
I'm Miranda Bass. You've been listening to Drinking and Drashing Torah with a Twist, and you don't even know what passes for tea in Long Island. It's criminal, and I would know.